Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast.
Hi there, how are you all? Welcome to the What Bitcoin Did podcast, brought to you by Kraken, the best place to buy, sell, and trade digital currencies. I'm your host, Peter McCormack, and today I've got the next installment of my Lightning Month. I have a second critique of the Lightning Network, this time with Dan Robertson, but before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So first up, we're going to talk about BlockFi, and I have finally signed up to one of their interest accounts. I have put my Bitcoin where my mouth is. I've put 20% of my portfolio into one. Okay, so got to say a couple of things about this first. If you're thinking of doing this, definitely do your research. There have been a lot of people talking about this with a lot of different points of view. I did an interview with Zach Prince, their CEO, which is available on my SoundCloud if you want to check that out. But I believe in the product now. I've heard enough. I want to give it a go. So yes, today I stuck 20% of my Bitcoin portfolio in there. I'm going to see how it goes. I don't know if I'm going to leave it in there forever, whether it'll be a month or a year. But anyway, I've signed up. I'm looking forward to seeing how it works. Looking forward to getting some interest on my Bitcoin. And look, it was super easy, actually. It was so easy. All you do is you sign up with your email and your password, you set up your security, you complete your KYC, and then you're given a deposit address, submit your Bitcoin, and you're there. So mine's done. As soon as the month is up and I get my interest, I'll let you know how that works. I'll let you know the experience. But if you're interested in this and you definitely want to check it out, then head over to blockfi.com, which is BlockFi.com. Also, I need to talk about my other new sponsor. I spoke about them last week. This is Dropbit, the wallet by Coin Ninja. You definitely want to check it out. I did a little promotion up on my Twitter. I gave away $1,000 from my first invoice from them. 10 people received $100 each, and I did it all with the wallet. I did it for a couple of reasons. Firstly, it gave me a chance to play with the wallet. Secondly, it was a chance to get some of you to download the wallet and get some feedback. And actually, do you know what? The feedback was pretty much universally great. Everyone seems to love it. Everyone seems to love the UX. I did. I thought it was super easy to set up, super easy to record my seed, super easy to send Bitcoin. It really was a great experience. And I'll tell you what else I love about the Dropbit wallet is they provide education in there. So I'm going to be working with them on doing loads of cool things in the upcoming months. We're going to create some education things together, some tutorials. We're going to get that up on the website. So keep an eye out for that. But if you want to check out Dropbit, that is Dropbit.app. Okay, so on to my interview with Dan. And following the hullabaloo of me wanting to interview Peter Risen, which I don't think actually turned out that bad, and some of the feedback has been really good, there were a bunch of people who got in touch and said, look, if you want to do a critique of Lightning, then Dan Robinson is a person you want to speak to. So I reached out to Dan, and when I was in New York, I caught up with him, and we talked about his thoughts on Lightning. I did watch a few of his presentations beforehand and read some of his articles, and he explained to me where he sees there's some potential problems with Lightning and his proposed solution, which is packetized payments. I also want to say a big thank you to Mike Dudas from The Block, who lent me an office to do this interview. And also, I just want to say, like, I'm not going to keep doing critiques. I just wanted to speak to a couple of people. I have actually got a super interesting interview that's going to be recorded this week with somebody you definitely would have heard of, who's going to run through some of those critiques with me and offer a counter perspective. So you'll want to keep an eye out for that. But as ever, if you've got any questions about this, you know you can reach out to me. And listen, if you enjoy the show and you want to support what I do, head over to whatbitcoindid.com, click on the support section. It will explain everything you can do there. And I also want to say a big thank you to my top tier patron, Rise Wallet, a new way into Bitcoin. No signups, just scan the card and you are holding Bitcoin. Find out more at risewallet.com. Okay, so on to the interview. If you've got any questions, then feel free to reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. Hi, Dan. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming on. So when I picked Peter Risen to interview, I got a lot of stick. But two or three people got in touch with me and said, you really need to speak to Dan. And then you ended up following me on Twitter. And a couple of weeks later, here we are. So thank you for this. I'm doing a whole series about Lightning, a whole month on Lightning, a whole bunch of interviews. But I do want to have kind of a balanced look. I do want to look at some of the criticisms as well as talk to people who are supporters of Lightning. So it's great to have you on. I've seen a couple of your presentations. Thank you for sending me those. I think it would just be helpful. Can you just give a background of like who you are, what you know about the tech, and why you're useful for this conversation?
So to be clear, I consider myself both of what you were saying, which is someone who has, I think, a lot of criticisms of Lightning and also a supporter of the technology and someone who's ultimately rooting for Lightning to succeed. My name is Dan Robinson. I'm a research partner at Paradigm, which is a crypto asset investment firm. I'm here, though, representing my views and not those of the fund. Previously, I worked at Chain and then later Interstellar when Chain was acquired. And before that, I was a securities lawyer in New York. I've been, for most of my tech career, I've been a blockchain protocol researcher, and I've worked on generally a lot of scalability solutions, a lot of smart contract and scripting, virtual machine and higher level languages, and some cryptography and confidentiality, just sort of the gamut of blockchain protocol research. And recently, a lot of that has been around second layer scaling, including Lightning, but also including a couple of projects, Interledger and Plasma, which are two that I think sometimes can sort of show ways that maybe Lightning can be improved. And then one, there's another, which I recently came out with a paper on called the Rainbow Network, which is another sort of alternative layer two scaling solution.
Okay, and Plasma is what's being worked on for Ethereum, right?
That's right. I think when you think of it as a general category, it's a different way of doing a slightly different way of doing layer two scaling that currently isn't possible on Bitcoin, and would require some protocol upgrades. And I could talk a little more about that to actually get some of these advantages on Bitcoin. It isn't what you would say just like Lightning on Ethereum. It's a different structure, and it has different trade-offs.
Okay, and Rainbow is something you're working on for which protocol?
So Rainbow Network is just sort of a general idea, and so right now it's just a paper, and I'm not planning to implement it myself. It's just sort of an idea I'm putting out there, and it can be implemented on sort of more natively on Ethereum or other Turing equivalent blockchains. But there's actually a way, and it's described in the paper, of implementing a limited version of it on top of Lightning.
Right. I'd also think it's useful just to put it out there is that you're not a big blocker looking for faults in Bitcoin, and you are a fan of Bitcoin, but you also are interested in other protocols, right? You're not just here to pull it apart.
That's right. So yeah, I mean, I consider myself generally sort of a part of the Bitcoin community, broadly speaking. And one of the big projects I've worked on in the past was a Bitcoin smart contract language called Ivy. I'm also part of the Ethereum community, and that's something that I've spent a lot of time working with the Plasma community, and then I've worked tangentially on some other projects, including Interledger, and then of course also still consider myself part of the Stellar community, and I'm friendly with those people. And generally, I don't consider myself a Bitcoin Cash person, because like you said, I think I generally consider myself a small blocker, I guess, but I'm friendly with a lot of those people. And I think there's most of the stuff I've worked on has involved drawing lessons from something I've learned in one blockchain or one community or one set of ideas, and trying to apply them in another area to kind of get an idea arbitrage. So I think most and a lot of good ideas in the space come from importing something that is maybe even like common knowledge in one area and applying it to another area where maybe it's not as familiar.
So you have friends in different coins and different protocols, and you're not out there fighting everyone. Are you some kind of freak?
We'll see if I can maintain that once all the blockchain civil wars start happening. But look, I think right now, I think there's a lot more to be gained from learning from people in other protocols. And in fact, people are working often on the same problem. So I really do think there's a lot to be gained from knowing a lot of people and being friendly with people in a lot of different communities.
Yeah, I heard it from one person that maximalists shouldn't be so scared of other protocols because Bitcoin actually benefits from ideas being tested out on other protocols.
Yeah, I mean, that used to be the Bitcoin line, right? Was no other coin can succeed because Bitcoin would be able to import any ideas that they come up with and that they add. Bitcoin would be able to just add as a feature or as a side chain or something like that. You don't hear that as much anymore. In part, and I think it's a shame because Bitcoiners don't seem as interested in changing the protocol, even again through soft forks, even through relatively safer mechanisms, and even relatively conservative changes like some of the ones I might talk about. And I think they just don't think there's necessarily as much to learn, and partly out of I think this kind of hostility. So no, I definitely think that Bitcoiners and people from every community should be interested in learning from people working on similar problems and other ones.
Right. Well, let's get into Lightning. What does Lightning actually mean to you as a technology?
Yep. So the way I like to think about Lightning, and I feel like not everybody necessarily thinks of it this way, is it's a composition of two technologies. One of them is payment channels, and that's a way of doing off-chain ledgers. So these off-chain bilateral ledgers between two parties. And the other is a way of having atomic updates between those payment channels. And that's to allow someone who has, if I have a payment channel with Peter, and then Peter has a payment channel with Alice, I guess I can pay Alice through Peter by making a payment to Peter and then having him make a payment to Alice. So the second part of this is having a way to do those updates atomically. And so if you separate these out, I think there's a lot of ways that the payment channel side can be made better. And there's especially a lot of ways that the atomicity mechanism, in my view, can be improved.
Okay, so I'm still at the stage where I don't fully understand it all, because I never do. It's always technical, but I gradually get there piece by piece. So one of the things that I don't fully understand is, and you can help me understand this, if I want to make a Lightning payment to you, I have to have a channel open with you, right?
You have to have a channel open with me or a path to me.
Or a path to you. So as long as there is a connection somewhere in the network between me and you, it could be through a bunch of people, that can happen, right?
As long as there's sufficient capacity on those channels.
Yes. Is there a limit to the number of hops one has to take? Or is there an instance where over a certain number of hops, there's a certain time delay?
Yeah, so in theory, anything in the code, I think Lightning, the protocol supports maybe 25 hops. It's sort of it may be 20 or maybe 25. It's sort of an absurd number, and nobody really thinks that that any payment that has to take 20 hops would be a good idea. The more hops you have, the more fees you're paying, and the payment will take slightly longer. But the big problem is that you end up locking a lot of liquidity up along the network during the pendency of that payment. And if the payment completes normally, as payments typically do, then that isn't a big concern because it's only locked up for maybe less than a second. But if you're attacking the network, and this is one of my big criticisms of HTLCs, if you're attacking, which is HTLCs are the way that Lightning currently achieves this kind of atomicity that I was talking about between payment channel updates. If you attack the network by not completing that payment, then all of that liquidity along that entire path is locked up for, I think by default, it's 24 hours.
Right. Okay. So we'll get into that. Just a couple more questions first. So I understand with Bitcoin that there is a ledger, it's on all nodes, and there are tens of thousands, whatever, hundreds of thousands of copies around the world, and that's how we maintain decentralization. How does that work the same with Lightning? Is it just Lightning nodes, and they're exactly the same, and they all carry a same copy of the ledger?
No. So the idea of Lightning is that each Lightning node should only have to have information about the history of the channels that it opens. And that means that they only learn about transactions that they either are an endpoint on or that they participate in the routing of. If Lightning works ideally, you should gain some privacy. Although again, I think there's a lot of misconceptions on both sides about how much privacy Lightning actually gives you in practice, and how much state has to actually be stored.
Okay, so the way I'm starting to see Lightning really is just a balancing system. I think of it almost like a series of tubes, and each tube has some water in, and as I pour water from one tube into the other, they just kind of balance each other out, like a money balancing system. I know it sounds weird.
I think that's right. One thing that's important to understand about Lightning is that when we're talking about water, sort of a payment moving across the network, you shouldn't think of it as water being poured from one channel into the next and the next. It's more like a wave that transmits. Now, this is something interesting that I remember learning in high school physics, right? Is that when you see a wave in the ocean, maybe you think of it as like a water from out there in the ocean is coming all the way to us. But what's actually happening is the water all stays in roughly the same horizontal location, and it just moves up. And what is actually moves up and down during the wave, but what's actually being transferred is just energy. No water particles are coming this whole way, right? So it's like if you pull on a rope, The rope only moves a little, but this kind of wave moves all the way along it. A lightning payment is much more like a wave than it is like a particle being moved. So when you have these channel updates happening in sequence, it's kind of like you have each channel is a pool with some fixed amount of water in it, and the water is all on one side or the other of it. And then when the payment happens, in each of the pools that this travels across, the water moves from one side to the other. Mm-hmm. But water can't move from one pool to another, at least not with a Lightning Network payment. That would have to happen on chain.
Okay. And on the Bitcoin base layer, we have UTXOs. What do we have in Lightning that's equivalent?
Yeah. So you could think of HTLCs as being they literally are UTXOs. In the sense that if you close a Lightning channel while there's an HTLC pending, it gets its own UTXO. So an HTLC is the hash time lock contract. It's, like I said, the mechanism that's used to enforce atomicity across different channels in Lightning. But I think it's not really, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the primitive, at least as far as when you think about payment channel networks. The primitive is really these connections, these edges on the graph of Lightning Network nodes that are these connections between routers and some amount of money in them. And that's the channels. And so each channel is really kind of the primitive. And then in the channel, each side has a balance and money can move between those two, between the two parties in that channel and that balance. That's really what I'd say is the core primitive of a payment channel network.
Right. And is there any possibility in the future, anything being worked on that means a payment can go from one person to the other without a channel open? Or is that a core fundamental requirement of the system?
So there are ways to do right now on Lightning to do payments to or from parties that don't currently have a channel open with anyone. And those, I think it's sometimes called submarine swaps. That's basically where one of the parties does enters into the same contract, but they do it on chain. And that's though I think it's sort of a core idea here. You could, the Lightning can, it's if you think of it just abstractly, this is just a payment network, and you can have these connections between two nodes be that they have a payment channel with each other. But if you wanted to like think a little more abstractly, you can say it's just this, I have a way to enter into pay you and a way to enter into HTLCs with you, and that could be on the Bitcoin main chain. So to sort of answer your question, I think you can do it as long as there's a way to make a payment to somebody and to have it be in an HTLC.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so this is really interesting. Gives me a better picture. So you've been playing with Lightning.
Yep.
What's your kind of overall experience so far, good and bad?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of good. I think it's some fantastic teams working on it and a lot of people building products on top of it. There are some technical design decisions in it that I think are mistakes and that I think it can be fixed and can be fixed potentially in future versions of Lightning. And sometimes you can actually just work around them with Lightning as it currently exists. But I sort of have been considering it my job to try to escalate a little. So one of those problems. I mentioned that there's the atomicity layer of Lightning and there's the payment channel layer of Lightning. And the one that I think I focus on and that I sort of I think my biggest critique is about the atomicity layer, and that's about how they use HTLCs. So HTLCs are a way of doing this two-phase commit type protocol for updates of ledgers. And this is a protocol invented by Tyr Nolan, I think many years ago. And it was originally designed for doing cross-ledger atomic updates. So like a Bitcoin, Litecoin atomic swap. Joseph and Taj came out with the Lightning Network paper, they adapted this. The brilliant idea there is to move this HTLC primitive and put it within, so that it's not enforcing atomic updates of main chain ledgers, it's enforcing atomic updates of payment channels. The thing is, when you're in a payment channel, there's actually much better ways to do the kind of fair exchange, the atomic exchange across multiple payment channels. There's better ways to do it than having this ledger enforced HTLC. And I'm not sure I have enough time to sort of go into the full details of it. I'd recommend definitely anyone who's interested in learning more about it, check out my talk at the Stanford Blockchain Conference in January called HTLC is Considered Harmful, where I go into how HTLCs work and what I think the problems with them are. But the high level on the problems that they cause is, one, this griefing attack that I mentioned before, where a party can refuse to complete an HTLC that is currently locking up liquidity across a multi-hop payment, and therefore cause all this liquidity to be locked up for, say, 24 hours without even paying a fee. And this is something that someone would do intentionally if they wanted to attack the Lightning Network and reduce the available liquidity there. Another problem is that HTLCs inherently provide this free option to the end recipient to complete or cancel the payment. And they need some amount of time to do that for this construction to be secure. And if it's a multi-asset payment, you end up getting what's called a free option, like a financial free option, whether to complete a payment, that you can choose whether to complete it based on the price changes of the assets that are being traded. And the final complaint, and this is maybe one that's, I think, gets more to your question, which is about my personal experience working with it. I was working on implementing a Lightning-like payment channel network for Stellar when I was at Interstellar, and that's called Starlight, and you can check out a demo of that online. And one thing I found with trying to do HTLCs is that they're pretty complicated. And certainly doing HTLCs depends very heavily on the details of the base ledger that you're trying to implement this network on. It depends heavily on the details of the payment channel implementation that you're trying to use. And generally, again, like I think it requires a lot from your from sort of the substrate that you're building it on. And the alternative that I talk about in the talk is this what I consider a very elegant mechanism called packetized payments, and that was developed by the team at Interledger, which, like I said before, I think is a fantastic project, and that was developed by some people at Ripple.
So a griefing attack, as I understand it, is that I can lock liquidity up on the network by creating payments but not completing them?
That's right.
How do I create a payment but not complete it? How does that actually happen?
So you would probably have to write custom software to actually do this attack, because, or maybe strategically bring your Lightning node offline within you know, a couple of seconds, because this is obviously not something that the Lightning Network protocol software is designed to do. But it's definitely something that's possible within the protocol, and that's just, you'd basically do the first half of receiving a Lightning payment, and maybe just you're sending this payment to yourself and routing it across a bunch of different hops, but you don't do the second half.
Has it been seen done?
It's a great question. I don't know if it's been done. It's very possible it's happened accidentally. I doubt that anybody's doing it now necessarily. But it's something that could potentially lock up a lot of liquidity on the network and really sort of annoy people who are putting liquidity on it.
So if somebody wanted to attack the network, they could quite simply create a whole set of different nodes, which are their own, write custom software to send payments to themselves, but as it's hopping through the network and they don't confirm the payments, they're locking up other people's liquidity. It's almost like a DDoS attack.
That's right. It's a denial of service attack.
So that's an obvious risk. Is there anyone who's talked about it with you? Is anyone talking about potential solutions to it? Because that sounds like something that isn't too hard to actually go and do.
I have. So I didn't come up with this attack. This was something, and I'm not sure if he came up with it, but I heard about it from Evan Schwartz at Ripple. And I think it's something that a lot of people who work on Lightning consider, you know, they're aware of it, and they've been aware of it for a while. I think they consider it not necessarily a big threat, in part because it requires, it's just a griefing attack. It's just a denial of service attack. It isn't something where you can necessarily use it to steal money. And what I've heard them talk about for solutions to it generally involve reputation. And I think that's a very challenging way to try to solve this problem, in part because it undermines potentially the privacy of the network. And in part because the reputation that would be required isn't just local reputation. It isn't just who I choose to open a channel with. It's anyone down the line from me can potentially grief me in this way. If I'm routing a payment that I didn't create, I didn't initiate the payment, I'm not receiving it, I'm just routing it, any of the parties downstream from me can grief me in this way. And that means I potentially need to evaluate with their credibility. And that's something that I think is maybe inconsistent with an open and private network.
And I guess if it was reputation-based, then it wouldn't be a trustless network.
That's what I think, yes.
Next up, I talked to Dan Moore about his criticisms of the Lightning Network and his proposed solution, which is packetized payments. But before that, I've got a message from my show sponsors. So we're going to talk now about my lead sponsor, Kraken, the single best exchange for buying and selling Bitcoin in the world. They've got over 4 million clients. Over $150 billion of assets have been traded since 2011. They've got 20 assets with up to 5x leverage, and they also offer 24/7 live chat support. They've been around for ages. They're doing everything right. They're focusing on security. They're also looking at new things to do with UX. Definitely building the single best exchange in the world. I'm a huge fan. I do, though, love their focus on security. And it's the only place where I will buy and sell a Bitcoin. Actually, I did it today. I did it again today. I had to sell off some Bitcoin, which I received as a payment for some advertising. And it was so super easy. Always is. I'm also going to be speaking to their UX team, finding out some of the cool things that are going to be coming up, which I can't wait to tell you about. And also, I'm going to be working with them on some special content about security. So join me in supporting Kraken, the best crypto exchange in the world. Head over to kraken.com, which is kraken.com. Also, my other lead sponsor, BlockFi. As I said in the intro, I have tested out their interest accounts and it was super easy. But listen, I know people have got concerns about this. This is why I'm doing it myself. This is why I put some of my own Bitcoin on the line. This is why I spent the time with Zach trying to understand the business and field the questions that people have about this product. If you haven't checked out that interview, it's on my SoundCloud, which is soundcloud.com/what-bitcoin-did. Zach answers all the questions that you had about the products. But I'm set up. I've tested it out. I've deposited 20% of my Bitcoin on there. I'm going to give it a go. I'm going to watch it for a couple of months, see how it works. I will definitely be feeding back to you on my experience. If you want to check it out yourself, definitely do your own research and head over to BlockFi's website, which is blockfi.com, which is blockfi.com. And one more announcement. I'm going to be heading over to Consensus in New York in May. I'm going to be recording a live episode on stage. Hopefully it's going to be a debate with a couple of amazing people. Two people have been on the show before. I'm hoping to confirm that soon because this is going to be super cool. Are you heading out there? Are you going to Consensus? Are you going to be in New York that week? If you are and you want to hang out, let me know. I've been speaking to the team over at Consensus and I've got a special offer if you want to get a ticket. They're on sale now at consensus2019.com. That's Consensus with a U, consensus.com. And if you use the promo code BitcoinDid300, you can get $300 off a ticket. I've looked through the speaker list. There are definitely some people I really want to check out myself. There's probably going to be a whole range of people that might interest you. You should definitely check that out. But yes, if you want to head over to Consensus, you want to get a ticket, I've got a discount for you for $300 off. That's at consensus2019.com. And the offer code is BitcoinDid300.
Okay, so the second is the free option. That was something else I found kind of interesting. Very interesting in cross-chain,
right,
atomic swaps, because you've got 24 hours to make a decision based on price. That's still relevant within Lightning because the price of Bitcoin might move.
It's not relevant if for a Bitcoin transfer where the sender is sending Bitcoin and the receiver is receiving Bitcoin and it's just Bitcoin and all the hops along the way. And that, in fact, is generally the Lightning
Are you sure? Because think about it like this. Say I am making a payment to you. The price of Bitcoin in dollar terms shoots up. And I think, oh, I'm going to cancel that. I want my Bitcoin back. So actually, it's still relevant.
Well, so if you're the sender, you can't cancel a payment. So it's the end recipient who can choose to cancel or not.
Yeah.
And generally, I mean, if you're receiving a payment, you'd rather have Bitcoin than no Bitcoin.
But at the same time, say the price of Bitcoin dropped heavily, I might not want to receive it.
Why wouldn't you want to receive? Your alternative is receiving zero.
Well, no, the alternative is, say I've got a store that's accepting Lightning payments, and I'm selling something that costs $50, and I have a price that comes in a certain amount of Bitcoin, but the price of Bitcoin drops during that time. Say something disastrous happens and the price drops 20%. I could cancel the payment, say payment not received, and then reissue the invoice, but the invoice would be higher. Most people charging in things like Lightning and Bitcoin, they're using the dollar as the unit of account. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that might be true, I think, but that's between you, the shirt vendor, and whoever is buying it from you. And you may have agreed at the time that before they sent the payment that this payment is considered final now. So they could rightly complain to you, even if you have potentially this capability of waiting to complete the payment. The transaction is already completed as far as between you. So I think it's a bigger deal when the atomicity is really only enforced on-chain within the Lightning Network, where all the hops in this payment are supposed to be enforced by the network itself, as opposed to when, you know, with a t-shirt, you're also already relying on the person to actually send the t-shirt. But so this is the Lightning Network people's general response to this, and it's I guess a fine position as far as it goes. It's just the Lightning Network really is only for Bitcoin. It's only a single asset payment network.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So when you talked about the problems with, say, Bitcoin to Litecoin, I would have thought most Bitcoiners would go, well, we don't care because everything else is a shitcoin.
Yep, that's right. So I think that if that's all you want your payment network to be, I think the free option problem isn't really a big problem. I think there's actually a lot of potential for in having a cross-asset payment channel network. And that's what Interledger was really designed at its core to provide, to be sort of a much more layer one agnostic platform. But yeah, I mean, if you really only want it to be a single asset being traded across, the free option isn't a problem. I definitely grant that.
And another thing you said is part of the presentation, you said that smaller payments are not actually economical.
So smaller payments are, you can definitely do them on Lightning. People do these one Satoshi payments. They're not enforced on chain exactly. And what I mean by that is, so to do a payment with an HTLC, you each of these parties has to actually enter update their payment channel to include this new UTXO in the commitment transaction of the of their Lightning channel. If they were to close out this channel while a payment is pending, that means that there's an extra UTXO there, and then this has to be settled through an extra transaction. And so the actual cost of settling an HTLC on chain, I've estimated to be like maybe around 50 cents, depending on, again, what your fees are and what the price of Bitcoin is. But that's just much too expensive. It's not worth it if your payment is less than 50 cents. Mm-hmm. And so if you do a smaller payment, you can still do it on Lightning, but each of the parties that is routing the payment ends up trusting their counterparty with sort of an informal HTLC. It says like, we agree that if we were to close this network, this now, we would settle it based on what it should settle at, but the ledger's not going to enforce that.
Right. Okay. That's quite interesting. So that's, I didn't know about this.
Yeah. I mean, and this is something that I think Tadge, who is one of the co-creators of Lightning, has complained a little about, is that it's not transparent. Ultimately, I don't think it's a big deal because this is something that you only trust your immediate counterparty for. You can only sort of grief your counterparty. And the details here are actually that during the pendency of these HTLCs, the fees, the pending payment goes to miner fees. So it means that either party, by closing at the right moment and cheating their counterparty in a particular way, can cause their counterparty to lose a little money. Since it's less than 50 cents, and this is something that this is a channel that you've agreed to enter into with some particular party. Basically, they say this is just like I'm trusting this person who I've entered into a channel with for up to 50 cents, and I think that's fine. I just think they should be more transparent about it.
The first time I heard about it was with your presentation. So you said, you said your presentation was that HTLCs are harmful. I mean, that's quite a spiky statement.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, there's a famous article called "Go-To Statement Considered Harmful" from a few decades ago, and so it's a format for making provocative statements of this sort. And what it really means is that this, as a design pattern, I think people should be considering alternatives to it.
Okay, but that would be quite a big change for Lightning to not be using HLTC.
It might be. So the thing is, so what Lightning currently does for these sub dust limit payments, these really small payments that aren't economical to settle with an HTLC on chain. That's what I actually want them to do for every payment. And the way that you would send a payment that's, without increasing the trust requirements for these nodes, and this is this packetized payment method that was developed by Interledger. The idea is we do that method that basically the same method as Lightning does with sub-HTLC dust limit payments. But if you want to send a larger payment, you just send, you do that over and over again until you've sent the full payment. So you can, if you send, say, 50 cents at a time, then nobody has to trust their channel counterparty for more than 50 cents at any particular time, but you can eventually make as large a payment as you want. And these payments are relative, when they complete, are relatively fast. Okay. So that's the core idea of how, of the interledger method for atomicity, which is called packetized payments.
And packetized payments comes from, it's an original internet concept, right?
Yeah, that's right. And so part of the metaphor there, I think, is that this is in some ways analogous to how the internet routes data, is that rather than forming these sort of large chunky connections between two nodes on the internet to send data between them, they chunk it into packets and then sort of send those packets potentially through different routes, potentially in different orders, and you just make sure that the whole, eventually at the end, all the packets make it there and are kind of reconstituted into one payment.
And as a concept, has it been stress tested? Are there any flaws in it you're aware of?
So there's a few flaws in it, certainly. The biggest is that it increases the latency of large payments. So it means that potentially a very large payment being made over this network would take time proportional to the size of the payment. I don't think that's necessarily a big problem. And part of that is that I think people have started to recognize that Lightning isn't necessarily well suited for very large payments anyway. And I personally think that Lightning is mostly the real killer use case of it is for micropayments and relatively small payments. If you have a really large payment, your fee on Lightning is going to be proportional to the size of the payment at best, if you can even complete it at all. Whereas if you were to go on chain, you have essentially paying this constant fee for it. So I think above a certain payment size, it's going to make sense to make this payment on the main chain anyway.
Right. Okay. Again, that's another thing I wasn't actually aware of about the proportional size of, or is that only in the case of packetized payments?
No. So in Lightning right now, the larger the payment you're making, the harder it is for you to find a path, and potentially the more you're going to have to pay for it. Because you're paying essentially for the worst case scenario, which is that you do this griefing attack, right? And that everybody's liquidity is locked up for a day. And even if you don't do that, you're, by making this large payment, you're really shifting around the liquidity on the whole network. So it's harder to find potentially capacity for that. And it's a bigger change, so you pay a larger fee for it.
Okay, let's move on to payment channels, because there's certain issues you've noted with those. You think they're limited by the base chain?
That's right. So I think Lightning's payment channels are not bad. And it took a really heroic effort by Bitcoin Core developers to get SegWit included, which was what was needed to really enable the payment channels that they have now. But I think you can still do a lot better. Some of these changes don't require upgrades to Bitcoin script, and I think are going to be part of upgrades to Lightning. But some do. So some of the problems right now are in Lightning as it's currently designed, there's some data that is more than just the information in your wallet, where if you lose it, you lose the ability to receive money out of your channel, even if your counterparty is honest. I think at least some parts of that can be fixed without Bitcoin protocol upgrades, and are probably going to be fixed in a new version. But I know people that it's really sort of bitten, because you can have data corruption issues that cause you to lose your the money, even if your counterparty is honest. I think the big problem is the way that fees are committed to right now in Lightning payment channels, because you basically have to decide on what the fee that you're going to pay and commit to that particular fee at the time that you update the state of the channel, rather than at the time that you're trying to close the channel. And so if there's congestion on the main chain, that could be a problem. So you really need to, you generally need to set relatively high fees for that, which may not end up being necessary. So there are ways to fix some of these problems. And I think there's an improved and others, and I think there's an improved design called L2, ELTOO, that Christian Decker and Lalu from Lightning, I think, came out with. And I think they're very valiantly pushing to get an opcode included in an upgrade of Bitcoin, a protocol upgrade called SIG hash no input. I'm not sure when that's actually going to get added and how long it will take to really adapt Lightning to use that. But one thing I've noticed is it doesn't seem like there, despite how much Bitcoin core developers and Bitcoin users really care about Lightning, there doesn't seem to be a huge political constituency for pushing forward changes like this or others that would really improve it. And I find that frustrating just because I would really like to see a lot of Bitcoin script upgrades and haven't really yet.
From what I understand, and people talk to me about the scripts, is that there's a significant difference between, say, Bitcoin and Ethereum, because Ethereum's Turing complete, Bitcoin isn't. You wouldn't be pushing for Bitcoin to become Turing complete, right?
There is just miles between where Bitcoin is and Turing completeness.
Yeah.
I think what I'm pushing for really is something that's much closer to just like very incremental steps. I think you get a lot from Turing completeness. I will say that like. I think there's a lot that people can design in Ethereum, people frequently do, that would maybe blow the minds of some people who are used to just thinking about payment channels entirely in terms of pre-signed Bitcoin transactions. But that said, I love the Bitcoin model. Again, I wrote helped design a smart contract language for Bitcoin called Ivy, and this would all fit within Bitcoin's current model for how transactions work. It's just literally a matter of like adding a couple opcodes to it. So for example, the ability to concatenate two byte strings that are on the stack, the ability to just concatenate two strings is a really simple opcode. It was in Bitcoin originally, and Satoshi disabled it for reasons that I think aren't really relevant anymore. And the core developers just kind of are relatively reluctant to add that back in. And the other is the ability to check a signature on data on the stack rather than just a signature on transaction data. And these could enable especially together, a lot of cool protocols, including potentially Plasma, doing Plasma on Bitcoin. But there's really sort of a lot of resistance to that. And that's something that I think a lot of people have just sort of, we've just recognized as maybe just core to where Bitcoin's goals are right now.
Are script updates dangerous at all? Do they present any inherent risks, any unknown unknowns?
Every protocol upgrade is dangerous.
Right, okay. So
I think adding an opcode to Bitcoin script is probably one of the safer upgrades that we would know how to do. You can either add it by overriding one of the no-ops or by doing a SegWit script version upgrade. So SegWit actually put in a pretty clean upgrade protocol for scripts, but it hasn't been used yet. Either way, I think these could be done either way. I think people are often what annoys me is that people are very concerned about what could be done with these upgrades, and that they don't like the applications that they could be used for. So people, there's another technology called Covenants, which is the ability for a script to essentially read the outputs of the transaction that it is being verified in. That provides a lot of really cool features and actually could enable some upgrades to how Bitcoin does payment channels. But people are concerned about it for reasons that I find kind of perplexing.
Okay, so there's a couple of last points that you discussed. Capital inefficiency. So in some ways, inherent to payment channel networks, you talked about this.
Right. So capital inefficiency, yeah. Any network that's just a payment channel network is going to have this problem of a lot of capital needs to be locked up for there to be sufficient liquidity on this network, more than the amount of payments that can be done on it. And there's a lot of imbalance also in the directions that these payments naturally flow, such that right now it's hard for someone to get, for example, receiving capacity on Lightning. I think right now you might have to pay to be able to buy receiving capacity. I think you have to pay something like 3-8% of the amount, which is just like, it would be relatively high as a transaction fee. And that's even before you have Lightning transaction fees on it. So the part of the problem is that everyone has to have these, people have to lock up a lot of capital and payment channels. And part of it is that the direction and the current capacities in each side of each of these payment channels matters a lot for that. So it's something that's hard to get around for this. There's a couple possible solutions for it. One is that I think Plasma actually provides a way to improve this. So Plasma is a technology that, again, right now is currently being only developed on Ethereum because it requires much more scripting than Bitcoin has. But in the context of Lightning Network, what it would basically allow you to do is transfer a channel to somebody off-chain without having to do a full transaction on the main chain for that. That's kind of the TLDR maybe of how I think Plasma could be adapted for to improve the Lightning Network. That would require a couple upgrades to Bitcoin Script. I think it would require some that would be considered significantly more out there than even the ones I was mentioning before. So it's not something that I think is probably feasible in the near future. But I think it does show that there's ways to do layer two scaling that maybe are can sort of be better, be more capital efficient, at least a little easier than Lightning does. And the other is that we don't necessarily need to have every payment channel, every edge on the Lightning Network be backed specifically by a payment channel. And so I mentioned before that I think Lightning kind of tightly couples these different layers of how HTLCs work on it and payment channels, and also that it's specifically on Bitcoin. And so, for example, when I was working on implementing quote-unquote Lightning on Stellar, there's very little of the Bolt spec, the specification for Lightning, that I would be able to really use for that, because a lot of it refers very specifically to Bitcoin, the Bitcoin transaction format, and depends on that. And if you had a protocol that was, and this is what Interledger aspires to be, is a protocol that's more agnostic as to what the base layer is. Interledger, this packetized payment method, can be done over. So Lightning can be done over any payment method that supports HTLCs. Interledger can be done over any payment method that supports just payments. If you can make a simple payment to somebody, then you can be an Interledger peer with them. And that payment doesn't have to be in a payment channel. It doesn't even have to be on a blockchain. This could be like if you can make a Venmo payment to somebody, you could potentially route Interledger payments through that connection. If you can if you can do make an on-chain payment to someone, if you just throw pennies across the Grand Canyon, you can implement Interledger on top of that. And that's not true of the HTLC method. And it's just generally not the philosophical approach that Lightning has taken. They're very, they care a lot about embedding this in Bitcoin specifically. And so why this matters, I think, is that one way to reduce the capacity problem would be for some of the channels in the Lightning Network to be backed by credit rather than fully collateralized. And that doesn't mean that you as a Lightning Network user have to trust anybody. This would only be a concern of the two parties that are directly involved in a particular channel. So Coinbase and Kraken, to take an example, it would be very expensive maybe for them to have a huge Bitcoin payment channel open between them. But if they could just sign a contract that says that we agree that we'll only have $1 million in flight at any particular time, and then we'll just settle with main chain Bitcoin payments, they wouldn't need to use any... they wouldn't need to lock up any collateral because they're willing to trust each other up to this certain amount and then just settle only relatively infrequently. And if Lightning could just seamlessly route over that hop as if it was a payment channel hop, it wouldn't affect the security of other users or of those payments at all. It would just affect, it's only entirely the local concern of Coinbase and Kraken. But the problem is the way that both Lightning the Lightning Network is not designed in this kind of layer one agnostic way. So they sort of have to hack around this. And also HTLCs are not designed to support this kind of base layer where it's like a legal contract between them. And so if someone was trying to do a really large HTLC payment on that, it has to be completed entirely atomically or not. It's, the contractual agreement between Coinbase and Kraken just isn't necessarily a great substrate for that. It isn't programmable in the same way. So that's why I think having one that's more flexible that allows anyway, if I can make payments to you, or if we can just like update a balance between the two of us, we can do interledger payments on it. I think that maybe provides one way out of some of the capital problems that Lightning has.
What I would take from this, my summary from all the points you've made, is that there's nothing disastrous here. They're more just things that you think can be improved. You're not coming here saying like Lightning's a disaster. It's just these are design improvements that you think will significantly improve the performance of Lightning.
Yeah, absolutely right. And my number one preference definitely would be for Lightning to adopt some of these changes and then succeed wildly.
Okay. How much have you discussed this with people? How much pushback has there been received? Has anyone criticized your recommendation? Has there been some kind of warm acceptance?
I think I'm friendly generally with a lot of Lightning people. And I think I think we mostly disagree about the size of the problems. Once we sort of like gotten down to the details, and they've actually informed me about ways that I was mistaken about some of the criticisms I was previously making about them. And I think I sort of, you know, once we've really discussed these in depth, I think they're very open to it. I think they think that these aren't, they think these aren't as big problems. Partly they're just not as concerned about it being a Bitcoin only network. Partly they think that, again, that some of these denial of service attacks maybe aren't just, no one's going to be incentivized to do them. I think these are empirical questions. I also think, you know, they're very focused on, as they should be, on the problems that people are facing right now. My concern mostly is I just want to really be raising the profile of these issues so that if this kind of problem ever occurs, we know, you know, like Lightning isn't screwed. We can make these particular changes to it.
Okay, fantastic. This has been really useful. I expect when it goes out that people will be very interested because there's a critique. I'd be interested to see what other people think, actually, because you've raised some things I wasn't aware of at all. So that will be very interesting. I hope there's no people coming at you for it. So thanks for coming on, Dan. How do people stay in touch with you and keep an eye on your work?
Oh, yeah. So my favorite venue generally is Twitter. So you can follow me at Dan Robinson on Twitter. My DMs are open if you want to complain to me about anything I've said, or certainly correct me if I've mischaracterized anything. I would love to hear from people and happy to correct it on Twitter. So yeah, at Dan Robinson.
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so how was that? What do you make of that? Did you enjoy that interview with Dan? What did you make of his criticisms? Do you think they were fair? Have you listened to that and the Peter Risen interview? How do you compare the two? I'd love to hear from you. Rather than break them down myself, which I think everyone knows that's not something I can do, I'm going to bring somebody on more technical to go through them, somebody you would definitely have heard of, and I'm going to run through each of the criticisms that both Peter Risen had and which Dan had and just get a counter perspective on it. And I'm not going to tell you who that is yet, but I will announce that later in the week. But yeah, I mean, you know, Dan seemed to present a very coherent set of criticisms about Lightning, and his proposed solution seems interesting, but you know, I can't technically break down whether that's a good solution, so I will put it to the experts. I'll get another interview up soon about that. But yeah, great to meet Dan, really enjoyed it. And if you've got any questions about this interview, you know you can reach out to me. My email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com. And if you want to support the show, there's so many things you can do. It doesn't matter if you just leave me a review on iTunes, or if you want to become a sponsor, whatever you want to do. But I do just want to say thank you to everyone who does support the show. There's so many of you that do so many things. It really is overwhelming at times. But if you want to find out more about that, I'm not going to go through the whole list this week. Just head over to my website, that's whatbitcoindid.com. Click on the support section. And yeah, keep an eye out for the upcoming interviews. I've got another one with Christian Decker coming up, which is a follow-up to my previous interview with him, where we go through a bit more of the technical stuff, and then a couple more interviews to close out the month. It's been really cool. It's been really interesting. I've really enjoyed learning more about Lightning. I hope it's proved useful for you. If you think I've missed anything, you would like me to cover anything else in the future, definitely feel free to reach out to me. Any questions you've got, my email address is hello@whatbitcoindid.com.